For SEN America, this is the SEN MLB Podcast.
And welcome to SEN Baseball, another big show about to get underway. Joining me behind the microphones today, former Florida Marlin Justin Charles. JC, welcome.
Good morning, Fritter.
How are you?
Fantastic.
Beautiful, mate.
But I'm getting better.
And always getting better. And also former Detroit Tiger, Russell Spear. Russ, welcome.
Good morning, gents. How are we?
Terrific, mate. We're going to get into some standings at the moment. Got to be quick on it today. We've got a couple of special guests coming up, and one in particular was particularly good MLB, former MLB. But the American League, who's hot in the American League? And, of course, that's the Baltimore Orioles. 8-2 in their last 10, have done a terrific job, won 5 straight. Current standing at 36-23. The Yankees are 6-4 in their last 10, so they're just scuffling away, just cracked that 500 mark at 30-30 at this point. In the National League, who's hot is the Washington Nationals, 7-3 in their last 10. Won a couple back-to-backs, that's no biggie, but currently your standings are 36-24 overall this particular season. Also, the Cubs, JC, your team, we're going to talk about them in a moment, 7-3 in their last 10, first team to 40 wins at 41-17.
Travelling very nicely, the boys, aren't they?
Yeah, and the area that I love, of course, is the who's not, Kansas City Royals, who have been pretty good this year so far, currently 3-7 in their last 10.
That means a lot to me. I hate them.
Yes, I know. Just over the 500 mark at 30.
Peter Moylan's in there.
All bar Pete Moylan. We
sort
love
of
Pete.
Back up there. We don't like Ventura. Dipped our toes in the water, try and get Pete this morning and be interested. He was in the big leagues, and they put him down for a couple of days and then back up the big leagues. I'm sure he stayed in town.
He's been going great.
Yeah, absolutely.
They had a little push and shove during the week, so he had a bit.
There was a little push and shove.
He did tell me by the time he got out there, everyone was just cuddling each other. So
yeah,
I think Pete was going to smack Giordano in the head.
It was on there for a moment, though.
Did you know Sal Perez didn't actually run out too much to stop Machado from punching him in the head there? I found that very interesting.
Yeah, it shows a bit of amongst
the
club.
They're done with him. I think his own teammates are sick of him, and right. Ned Yost seems to be condoning his actions as well. So
just over 500 mark at 30-29 overall are the Kansas City Royals. Oakland have been a little flat recently, 5-5 in their last 10. And in the National League, who's not, the Philadelphia Phillies, 3-7 in their last 10, currently with a record of 29-31, just below the 500 mark, but a little quiet of late. And the Arizona Diamondbacks, 3-7 in their last 10. They've got a win-loss record of 26-36. You just mentioned there the little dust-up that went along there. It was a couple of weeks now we've had a punch-up. There was the Batista one a couple of weeks ago, a punch landed. And this one, Manny Machado, a punch landed. Very rare that you see punches land. You alluded to the little jumper thing that went along there. You don't see that. Don't see punches land too often.
Look, I think in the scenario that we saw this week with Ventura and Machado, I actually think Ventura tried to hit him in the previous at-bat.
Yeah.
It's just completely out of line in my opinion. When you're throwing 9,900 miles an hour, I mean, you are seriously putting people's safety in jeopardy. And,
sure.
And all because you're losing by 5 and you're getting smacked around a little bit. I think it's a disgrace. And Ned Yost needs to do something. I mean, he needs to intervene and say something, because you can visibly see his teammates, Giordano's teammates, not approving of, you know, and not really wanting to fly the flag on his behalf because of his behaviour.
Yeah, and a couple of big notable moves. We got on the line National coach John Deeb. We're going to get to him in just a second. But a couple of big moves that have happened during the week. James Shields from the San Diego Padres gone to the White Sox. And Justin Morneau, former MVP, has moved to the White Sox also. They seem to be stacking themselves a little heading into the latter part of the season.
They think they're a chance. And I really love that move. I think James Shields with the Padres season not going really the way it's they probably anticipated at the start of the year, getting rid of James Shields or dealing James Shields. I think that's a great move for Shields and the White Sox. They're having a crack.
Absolutely. Keen to see the White Sox get amongst. It'd be great to see Cubbies.
Wouldn't that be great?
Cubbies and White Sox, going as deep as possible into the season. Look, we've got to be quick here. We've got John Deeble on the line. He's going to talk about Australian national team heading over to the Netherlands, an invitational tournament over there called Honkball, appropriately named. We'll be on the line with John Deeble in just a moment.
Baseball is the largest spectator sport in the world. In 2015 alone, over 73 million people attended professional games in the United States. With 65 million people playing in over 100 countries around the world, baseball is the world's second largest participation sport. Baseball is truly a game that everyone can enjoy. It's free to try and cheap to play, but most importantly, it's fun for all. From T-ball and Little League to seniors and masters, for the young and the young at heart, baseball is the perfect game for boys and girls, and mums and dads too. With over 105 local clubs in Victoria, get started by going to www.baseballvictoria.com.au to see how you can get involved today.
And welcome back to SEN Baseball. We're now going to talk some Australian / international baseball. Australia's just been announced to an invitational tournament in the Netherlands, Honkball. And on the line, we have the head manager of the Australian national team, John Deeble. Deebs, welcome.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Going great, mate. Now, this team, I did throw a soft eye across the squad that you've put together for this invitational tournament to the Netherlands. Logistically, there's a number of guys are sort of scattered all over the world. How long's the process been putting this actual squad together?
Yeah, look, it's taken a long time. And again, we haven't got any of the professional players. Obviously, they're in the States playing. We got a couple of kids playing in Europe, which made themselves available. And we had a couple of guys that pulled out right at the end. So it was tough putting the team together. And even given the fact that we don't have a lot of guys playing in the Australian League, it made it difficult. But we actually had young Jacob Sheldon Collins is at the University of Hawaii. We had him on the team. We had young Glenn Denning, who's in college. But both kids, unfortunately, had to pull out because of the upcoming draft. So, look, it was tough. But, you know, at the same time, it gives a lot of kids an opportunity to show us what they've got in preparation for selection for the WBC next March.
Deebs, JC here. Where does this Honkball tournament sit in the international landscape in terms of, quality and standard?
Look, it's a really good tournament. I actually played in it back many years ago, and it was the year that the whole team got the salmonella poisoning out of Barcelona, and we went to the opening ceremony with three players, and that was the year David Clarkson had to run off the field from left field. He had a case of the diarrhea, and
nothing brings a team together better, does it?
No, that's right. But, we struggle to put a team on the field. But it's a really good tournament. They pack the place. And it's a real party atmosphere for the fans. Like, they stay there overnight and they have bands. And it's a really good tournament. But the quality of the games are really good. We've got Japan there. We've got Taiwan there. We've got Aruba. We've got Holland. So, look, it's going to be a tough competition. But, there's points for the Premier 12. I think the one thing we've really failed in as a group in the last few years, hence we didn't make the Premier 12, was accumulating points, this point system that they've got. So, this gives us a chance. If we win this, we can pick up points and hopefully get into the top 12 teams in the world. So, we believe we deserve to be there. The way the system is, I just don't, Germany can play the Czech Republic in six games and pick up 60 points as a friendly. We don't have that opportunity, and that's hurt us down the track. And, so this is an opportunity to get over there. Number one, see what we've got for the WBC, and number two, pick up some points for the Premier 12. And number three, basically we've got players playing for Australia, which, we need to do more. We need to get the Australian team on the field as much as we possibly can. And that's why, we all put our hand up to make sure that we were available to go.
Deebs, Spearsy here, mate. Good morning. How are you?
G'day, mate. How you going?
I'm well. Dave, I think you've done a really good job putting this club together. I think there's some really good names on there. I did see some older blokes, I guess you'd say. Not that they're old. I don't mean any disrespect
there,
by
mate.
That. Yeah, with blokes like Shane Lindsay and Ulchi and those kind of guys. Look, what's the go with these guys? I know Shane really well, and I train with him most days, and I know he's in great form. But is there sort of light at the end of the tunnel for these guys? Are they trying to get back into the baseball fold, or are they essentially playing for Australia and taking what comes to them?
Look, for me, I'm a major fan of Shane Lindsay. And, you know, I want to see him pitch in the WBC for us.
Yeah.
You know, we all know he's got, you know, an arm in the upper 90s. And, you know, he's a great guy. I think he's a good guy to have around our club. So, you know, it was our chance to see a pitcher. Now we had Tommy John surgery. He was very close to making the Sydney team. You know, we've got a responsibility to put the best team on the field every time we go and play. And you know, in Sydney, I thought he was just a little bit short on that. You know, I watched him pitch in the ABL and, you know, the command was not quite there yet. But, you know, we know coming out of Tommy John surgery, you know, it takes 12 months. So, look, I'm hoping he comes back and dominates and pitches on the WBC. Where he goes from there, I'm not sure. You know, I think there's a market for Shane Lindsay in the Asian countries. You know, whether it is Japan, whether it's Taiwan or Korea. And, you know, an example of that, I was in Japan last week and the SoftBank Hawks have got a guy named Robert Suarez, and I was sitting there watching the game and I was like, wow, where's this guy from? And he was throwing 97, 98, and they signed him out of Venezuela. He'd never played professional baseball.
Wow.
So, you know, over there they love velocity, and, you know, if Shane can command the strike zone, there's no reason why he can't pitch over there and make some good money. Ulchin, you know, when he retired, I said to him, mate, I want you playing on the Australian team. And he had that big cheesy grin on his face. And you know, I talked to him over the last 12 months. And, you know, we got him in Sydney. He's fantastic. Well, what a leader. And his commitment. And you know what he said to me after? He said, I love playing for Australia. You know, and he said it's a highlight of his career. You know, and he played in the big leagues for quite a while. But just having him around the place, he's great for the kids. He's always got a smile on his face. He'll do whatever you want him to do. And I want him to play in the WBC also. So, and you know what? This sort of goes back to two. We've had a real, and I don't think people are seeing it, and I keep pushing it. And with the salary, international salary caps now, we're not getting as many kids signed. And if you look at the numbers, you know, back in your day, Spearsy, there was 80-odd players playing professionally, and now we're down to 24. And, you know, we've got a big push for guys going into college now, and I think we're probably going to have 100 in college this year. But, you know, the pro numbers are dwindling, and this is why the ABL is so important. This is why Asia now is so important. We've got to find players to replace the options. But right at this point, you know, there's not a lot out there.
Oh, yeah, I didn't realise the numbers were actually that low at 24. I know when I played, and you're right, I think we sort of sat around that 70-odd Aussies. We seemed to be everywhere. Everywhere you go, there was the token Aussie in America, which was really good for us. But I'll certainly throw my support behind a bloke like Shane Lindsay. I see him most days, and I watch him train, and I actually think, and I truly believe, he's throwing the ball better now than he ever has. Maybe that velocity is not quite back at that, you know, near 100-mile-an-hour mark, but I'm still hurts. I'm so impressed with the way he's going about his business, and I really wish him the best because I think he's doing good things.
Yeah, no, I'm a fan, and again, you know what? It might not hurt him to not be at the high 90s and start to command the ball better because he has got good stuff. And you know, for me, it's a belief. You know, I think, and I said this to young Sawpole back in March. You know, he was sort of struggling. I said, mate, you don't realise you're a lot better than you think you are. I think the same with Shane Lindsay. I think Shane Lindsay's a lot better than he thinks he is. And, you know, we see this when guys get older. You know, you look at Mitch Denning. You know, I signed Mitch Denning at 16. He got to double A. You know, was out of the game, got released, and went over to Japan and got to 25, 26 and was playing in their major leagues over there last year. And I think that's probably true with a lot of the Australian kids. And, you know, I know Charles and I talked during the week, the repetition the kids, the Australian kids just don't get as compared to other kids around the world. And you know, our kids get to 26, 27, and all of a sudden they start to figure it out. And, you know, Shane's a touch older than that, but, you know what, he's got a young arm. So there's no reason why he can't still be productive for 3, 4, 5 years, in my opinion.
And also, too, Deebs, having seen the KBO up close, it's definitely a hitter's league, and they're short on pitching. I mean, quality pitching. I think a guy like that with velocity, I mean, they sit around the 88, 91 miles an hour mark, and anyone that does throw that upper 90s is sort of, or mid to upper 90s, has got a bit of a leg up there. So, and a chance to earn some really good money, as you say, like $250,000 a year, if he can command that strike zone, like you said.
And look, it's getting exposure, and that's what the Australian team, you know, if you look back over the years, Adrian Burnside, I think he struck out 6 in a row on the Japanese team and ended up signing with the Omura Giants. Chris Oxpring, you know, had a great career over there. Brad Thomas. All these guys had great careers over there in Asia. Ryan Searle, being exposed through the national team and playing these Asian teams. You know, if they play well, you know, all of a sudden they get a knock on the door and they sign them. And I know this guy Suarez, when I started digging deeper, he signed for $2 million. He signed a 7-year contract. It was a $2 million signing bonus, and I think he's on $3 million a year. So here's a guy who's never played professional baseball, and all of a sudden he's got $23 million in his bank account over 7 years. So it's not a bad effort.
Deebs, you've been around baseball for a long time. You've mentioned the ABL a couple of times there. You were a big part of the first incarnation of the ABL. You're looking at it from the outside now, but obviously throwing a concerned eye across it as being national coach. Where do you see this second incarnation of the ABL compared to the first one?
Look, I think it's well documented. You know, I'm not happy with the number of imports we have playing. And, you know, we need Australian kids playing. We need Australian kids out there given the opportunity to play. And I don't think it's healthy that they're not playing. And, look, you know, in a couple of conversations I had, that's going to change. And I don't know where it's going, but, you know, again, we need to get more Aussie kids out there playing because that, you know, with the less kids signing now, this is the stepping stone. And, you know, you look at guys like Stephen Chambers on our Australian team, he would never have got that chance. You know, I pushed him down to Canberra to play. Next thing, he's on our Australian team. Josh Toles, how many more kids are out there that, given the chance, might end up playing for Australia? You know, Tolsey's, he's done fantastic, and Chambers is over pitching in Asia. Daryl George is over in Asia. You know, give these guys an opportunity, and you never know what can happen. And I think that's been a problem that we've had in this one. You know, back in the old one, you know, we had 4 imports. I think at this point, my recommendation was that we had 6, 2 starting pitchers, 2 relievers, and 2 position players. And, you know, people will tell you there's not enough players, but I know I sat down with our national coaching staff at the All-Star game in Melbourne. We put together a list of 52 players that should be in the league that aren't. And, you know, maybe there need to be some tweaks to the scheduling because guys still have to work. You know, you're talking about the Brad Harmans. Brad Harman needs to be playing in the league. But when you've got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and he's got a job, you know, that's tough. So, you know, that maybe that needs to be looked at a little bit. But, you know, I've got confidence that, you know, I talked to Hinesy the other day that, you know, they're heading in the right direction and there's going to be some changes and hopefully they'll all be for the good. But, again, you know, we've got to get Aussies out there playing. And I don't think people understand with the international salary cap now, that $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 guy that was getting signed out of Australia, that money's not there anymore because of a salary cap. You know, I know with my team, with the Red Sox, you know, we've hit our salary cap. So, you know, I can't sign anyone. So, you know, I like that kid somewhere in Australia for 20 or 30 grand. I can't sign him because there's a salary cap. And that affects a lot of clubs now. So, you know, we're going to see a reduction in kids signed. It's got nothing to do with what's happening at our lower levels. But, you know, to me, the grassroots, we've got to get more kids playing. You know, and you know, it was mentioned to me back in March that, you know, we need to be aiming for the top 3 in the world. And my reply was, well, we need to take our player base from 5,000 to 5 million if you want to be in the top 3 in the world. And that starts at the grassroots. And it's got to be affordable too. So, you know, I want to see the ABL go. I want to see it survive. And, you know, hopefully we can get a lot of Australian players playing.
Deebs, just a quick one. What sort of a result are we aiming for the honk ball tournament? What's the pass mark and where are our wins going to come from? Just quickly.
Look, Charlesy, I think, you know, we've had a couple of, you know, we won the silver medal in 2004. We had a failure in 2000. And since then, you know, every time we go out, it's about being world champions or Olympic champions. Or so, you know.
Is that realistic?
You might say, is it realistic? You know, was it realistic we could win a silver medal in Athens? And I think funny things have happened. So when we go out to Hong Kong, we're going out there to win, and we're going out there to win the whole thing. And it's like, you know, who would have thought we would have beaten the Arizona Diamondbacks? And, you know, we're probably a pitch away from beating the Los Angeles Dodgers. We made a mistake, you know, late in the game. So, you know, you've got to go out there with that thought process. And, you know, is it realistic? Well, you know, who knows at the end of the day. But I think if we go out there and say we want to go and finish 6th or 8th or 10th or 12th, well, I don't think that achieves anything. You know, it's even with the WBC, you know, we're going to be facing Major League All-Stars and we've got one hitter above A-ball. However, the mindset's still got to be that we can go out there and we can win. And you know, Matt Cizarca struck out 16 against us in that silver medal game. But, you know, we were still able to win a silver medal and still able to beat them. So we've got to have that mindset. And, you know, and that's what we've done. And, you know, I think we've had a lot of success. And, you know, we really work on pitching and defense. And that's our goals, to pitch and defend. And we know if we have to get more than 27 outs, we're in a little bit of trouble. If we have to get 30 outs, I mean, we've made 3 errors, well, we can't win. So, you know, if you look at our Australian team now, every time they walk out on the field, I think they're polished. I think we look professional and we defend. And, you know, we've given up some home runs late in games against, you know, some major teams. Cuba, I remember we gave up at the WBC and even the Dodgers hit, Puig hit that home run late in the game. And, you know, we've tried to rectify that, but, you know, we really try and pitch and defend, and we know if we do that and we get 27 opportunities, we get 27 outs, we're going to be in every game.
Deeps, look, we're going to have to wrap it up. The satellite's about to drop out, mate. Really appreciate your time today coming on and just giving us a few words. One quick one, are you going to get the team together at the MLB Academy at all, or as many players as you can?
No, because they're situated everywhere. A lot of these kids, the Nielsens, the Chambers, the Georges, they're all overseas playing, and, you know, we've made a big impact into Europe. A lot of kids are over there playing. So, no, we're going to meet there and strap it on, and we're going to go. And there's not much else we can do, yeah. Lack of funding. And so we'll get them together. But we won a silver medal on – we had 2 days preparation in Greece. So we seem to think that works.
and a shonky umpiring decision cost you, mate. You got to learn to speak Spanish, I think it was, Deeves, wasn't it?
No, he had you tossed out when you were running out there, mate. Don't worry about that. We're never going to argue that one.
As for the silly white watch he was wearing at the time, the sponsor's watch. But, Deeves, look, appreciate you coming on today. Thanks for your time. And good luck at Honkball, mate. Hope you go
good
well.
Good on you, guys. Hey, give us a call over there. We'll give you an update.
Absolutely. We'll track you down. Thanks, Deeves.
Good on you, guys. Thanks,
good luck, Deeves.
Bye-bye.
And great chat there with Australian national manager there, John Deeble, heading over to the Netherlands. Invitational tournament, guys, which is a great thing for Australian baseball, funded by the Dutch. Been going on for a number of years. First Australia represented in 1978, 1992, 1998. Andrew Scott, a name that a lot of people may remember, won the best hitter of the 1992 tournament. Australia's best performance in the past has been 1998, when they came second to Cuba back in the day. But he had some interesting stuff to say regards the ABL and the limit of imports to come out here. In the past we had 4, but he's, you know, they've obviously been having chats at a certain level to decide what the amount of imports can come in.
But Fritter, I must admit, I love Deeps. You know, I've known him for a long time, and I love the direction, and I love his leadership, and I love his attitude. I think he's the right man for the job, and I think he does a fantastic job.
Sure.
I know he's probably on a hiding to nothing being in that role, from the outside looking in, but I think he does an amazing job with good perspective on baseball in the world. But the ABL one's really, really interesting, because I played ABL. We all played ABL.
We've all played it
at some stage. And look, I watched it with the Monarchs in its first round before they left the league and come back, and I was able to join in the second time round.
Yeah.
We were teammates. All three of us were teammates at one stage. What do you guys think? Like, I mean, is the ABL in good shape? Do you think it's going in the right direction?
interesting. Through the first one, I see the first one as having lasted 10 years, run by Australians, and then got into some financial trouble and only lasted that 10-year period. Now we've come in with MLB support, which you'd think should help the process, but I see problems and we're only at year six. This time round, we are now completed six seasons of the ABL, and I think there's some real issues. A question was posed to me during the week. I was involved in a conversation. Somebody just threw a question of, because we do this, the podcast, as we do here, SEN Baseball, posed the question of, oh, where's the ABL at? Well, I had to think for a couple of seconds, and to me, it's the simple answer is, I have no idea. The silence is deafening with regards to what may or may not be going on in the league. There's all sorts of rumours that MLB are supposed to pull out this month, June of 2016.
Is that right?
And then they're supposed to be, it was handed over to the ABL to come up with private ownership to look after the league. But right now, the way I look at it is it's the only term I can kind of come up with. The silence is deafening because you absolutely hear nothing about the ABL.
Look, I think I had a really eye-opening experience last couple of weeks in Korea and seeing an absolute flourishing high-level baseball competition domestically within that country. And it seems my best comparison would be it's almost exactly like the AFL in Korea. So the Australian Football League here at the top level, because the best players get around $1 million, $2 million, then you've got a whole bunch of players around the, you know, $300,000 to $600,000 mark, and then a whole bunch of players on about, you know, $20,000 to $100,000 in a season. So it's pretty comparable. They've got a lower tier minor league baseball, which they call the Futures League, and that sort of feeds into that, and they recruit them out of high school, very similar to the under-18 competition we've got in football. You know, you get drafted out of that at that age, and then you go into professional baseball from there. So very, very similar sort of structure pay-wise. I think the ABL needs to pay the players properly because we heard Deebs talk about Harmon, you know, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday schedule. Man, that's got to go. That's actually got to go. In Korea, they have Tuesday to Sunday, so they have Mondays off. They play three-game series, so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is a series. Then you go Friday, Saturday, Sunday as a series against the team. They play, so it's an even competition all the way throughout. It's backed by big companies like LG, like...
That's our problem, though. We don't get that.
Yeah, no problem. I'm just saying to move forward. I mean, imagine if the mining companies like BHP and Rio Tinto, and we had the Rio Tinto Dodgers, or, you know, we had... I'm just saying, just come with me on it. Just come with me on it, because the players need to be paid $28,000 to $30,000 a year, and they need $150,000 to $200,000 for a couple of imports. So that's not a lot of money. That's not a lot of money. We need purpose-built specialist stadiums that hold 10,000 to 25,000 people.
The MLB clubs pay for the imports at the moment. That's the way they pay for.
Yeah, but it's never going to work that way. It needs to be self-sustained. And then all of a sudden, you've got a marketable product that you can actually put professional people in there and sell the game. Because look at the Hanwha Eagles, my local team. My wife's a Daejeon girl, and so obviously I adopted the Hanwha Eagles. But all of a sudden, they're a little business within that community, and they get to sell jerseys, and they get to sell tickets, and they do all little promotional events and things like that. And when they get on a roll, there's a lot of energy and enthusiasm and all that kind of thing. I think that model can actually work, but it's going to take, and it's not a lot of money either, Frida. Like, it's not a lot of money to get it up and running, but it needs, you know, there needs to be some energy and enthusiasm behind it.
Yeah. Clubby?
Now, I've heard a few rumours. We had some rumours from you before, Frida.
Real big on rumours here, but we'll take them anyway.
I've heard a few rumours regarding the next ABL season, and I've heard that private ownership is still very much on the table of teams, and also that a team, who I cannot name, will be playing in a new stadium next season.
Why can't you talk about Adelaide? Because they're moving to a new stadium. That's where they play the junior tour. It's sort of been on the table for a while. Apparently, it's a beautiful complex. It's a 3 or 4 ground complex. And like they've been at Norwood Oval for a long time, have the Adelaide Bite.
They have.
And moving to this new one is an absolute fantastic move by Adelaide.
I think that's one of the keys to the success of the game here in Australia at the elite level is purpose-built stadiums that hold, you know, 10 to 15, up to 25,000 for the bigger franchises that will draw, because this playing at football fields and you know,
rugby. Remember some rugby fields. Yeah, I mean, I loved it because it was a short. Right.
It's great to get the league started, but now I think we're at a stage where if it's going to go forward, that you know we need those purpose-built stadiums where you can build atmosphere and have bleachers and all that kind of thing.
I can tell you from personal experience, the happiest people in this league right now that's going out of Norwood are the relief pitchers on the opposite field.
Yes.
You should see that crowd with a few West Ends in them.
Yes.
When you're warming up, they're all of about 3 foot away and they just let you have it.
I got hit in the back of the head with a tooth once.
Post-game, it's a beauty, though, the Adelaide trip. Clubby. Don't worry about that. Adelaide is a beauty of a road trip.
Great road trip, Clubby.
I just want to throw out a hypothetical here. JC, I agree with you. Playing in purpose-built stadiums is fantastic. Unfortunately, in this country, I don't see a model where we're ever going to have a 15,000-seat baseball stadium. It's just not sustainable.
That's why they're not asking you for the answers.
Funnily enough, that's also why they're not asking you. But anyway, it's not sustainable.
Anyway.
It's not sustainable in this country because the sport isn't popular enough. Unfortunately, that's the cold hard truth. So I would love to see it. Realistically, not sustainable. Are we not then? Purely hypothetical question. Better off playing in football stadiums, which yes, aren't perfectly suited to baseball, but we can get those larger crowds. What do you think?
Okay. For the game to move forward, exactly what I said. We need purpose built smaller stadiums where you can put 10,000 to 15,000 in them to build atmosphere. Going forward, football fields are not the answer.
And there's some good ones around the country.
Absolutely.
There's some rippers. Look, Perth's a ripper.
Perth's a beauty. Thornley there. Parry Field was a terrific complex. Parry
Field,
gone now.
Parry Field was a beauty.
It was.
Oriel Park was a beauty.
Yeah. Auburn Park.
Auburn,
that was a beauty.
I think they got condemned at the end. Beautiful playing surface.
There's some good ones. Canberra, Narrabunda, it's a ripper.
About to spend $5 million up there at Narrabunda.
It's really, obviously, Blacktown. So there's some good purpose-built fields around. Yep. I know we down here in Melbourne have Altona, which gets a bad rap because of probably its location, but it plays well. You know, it's a great field to play on.
Once you're
it's trees in the outfield. It's proper stands down the left and right field line away from being one of those stadiums.
You're absolutely right.
Anyway, we've got to go to a break, boys. Great little chat. But the point of the whole thing is my concern is we hear nothing. At the moment, there's not a whole lot being said about the ABL, and it has to be a concern.
But you didn't really give an opinion, Fritter. I know you love an opinion, and you sort of just danced around that a little bit. Where is it at, mate? What do you think? Where is the baseball at?
You weren't supposed to ask me this bit. It's interesting. I'm concerned.
Right.
I'm really concerned where it's at. And more that we're not hearing. Generally, if you've got something good to say, they're going to come out and say it.
Sure.
Generally, when there's nothing to say, it's because it's not anything to talk about. If that means that we're not hearing any news at all because the ABL's dancing around trying to find an owner, trying to talk MLB into staying involved, whatever that may be, it's a concern because we're only 6 years into this second incarnation of the ABL.
Right.
The last one only lasted 10 through financial reasons. I'm concerned it's heading down the same path.
You're a man in the know. You do know a lot about what's going on in this league. There's some real steps in the right direction as far as privatisation goes in some states, right? Like I hear Perth has got some good backing, and
this is all we're hearing is maybes.
Right.
That's my concern.
There's no confirmation on those.
There's a bunch of guys that have. This guy might be interested in being involved. This guy might be interested in being involved. We're hearing maybes here and mights there, and we're not too sure, and this sort of stuff. Again, I just sort of come back to the main point is we're 6 years into this thing. We've had 6 years to run it. You've had MLB funding for 6 years to get to a certain point.
It's never going to work that way.
Sooner or later.
It is doomed to failure if they continue down that road.
Are these Asian League, Major League
I think that's the model.
Organisations, would they be a viable option? Instead of MLB, when we go to the Japanese league?
I think the model...
Certainly closer.
The model, and not only that, but we have to play them in all the international tournaments.
That's right.
And I think we're mad to not, you know, at least imitate what they're doing on a lot of levels. But I think that's definitely the model on how they're running their leagues is the way we need to go. Because on the current path, there's no way known. It's doomed to failure because and it's proven the fact.
We're gonna go to a break, JC.
Yep. If we don't have proper funding for the best players, they're not going to play. Why would they play?
I agree. That's true.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Look, we're going to go to a break. Clubby's just clipped me over the ears for the sixth time. But stick with us. It was a great chat with John Deeble. Nice little ABL chat there, guys. Stick with us. We're going to come back with a major leaguer in studio here. The fifth Australian to play in the major league, and that is Mark Hutton. So stick with us right after the break. We're going to be chatting with former New York Yankee Mark Hutton.
This is Warwick Sopel with the Detroit Tigers, and you're listening to SEN Baseball.
And welcome back to SEN Baseball. Got a special guest now in the studio, Australia's fifth representative to make it at the major league level. I don't count five because Joe Quinn doesn't come into this conversation. Nobody knew about Joe years ago. So I claim you as the fourth Australian to play at the major league level. Mark Hutton. Mark, welcome.
I appreciate you having me. That's great.
Mate, you initially debuted with the New York Yankees of all teams, the most storied team in baseball history, one of the biggest organisations on the planet. What was the moment? Was there a moment where you actually... the light bulb went on and you went, oh my God, I'm playing with the New York Yankees. Is it putting the uniform on for the first time? When was that moment?
Yeah, good question. Look, I've got to go back a little bit. Back in sort of AA when I was representing the Albany Yankees, I was sort of having some pretty good success in the minor leagues. And I sort of realised then that, you know, I'm a good chance here. And then I ended up going from, dating back a little bit from there, I went from A ball to AAA in my third year of pro ball. And I ended up...
It's a big jump.
It is. I felt like I was going to the big leagues from an A-ball kid. I was only 3 years in the system at that point, so I jumped to AAA, pitched in the playoffs for the Columbus Clippers. And then at that point, I really realised that, man, I'm pretty close here. So they always did talk about, you know, you're only a phone call away, and that was exactly what happened, you know. So, excuse me. So I ended up pitching in Columbus in 1993, and I was in the airport coming back from a road trip with the Columbus Clippers, and we're sitting around the carousel getting our baggage, and Stump Merrill was our manager at that point. And he was actually an ex-Yankee manager.
Yeah.
And he's come up to me and he said, actually, over the airwave in the airport, Stump's name was mentioned. And all the guys are standing around the carousel. Oh, Hutt, this is going to be for you, man. I'm like, no, not a hope in hell. So anyway, Stump Merrill's walked up to me with a piece of paper and said, Hutt, you're going to New York. You're pitching in New York tomorrow night. And I'm like, I just couldn't believe
you
it.
You think you're getting punked?
Absolutely.
Manager's in on it. He's punking me, you know.
Wow. We were just having a bit of a gamble on which bag was going to come out first, and now $5 for the first bag, and it's like all of a sudden, Stump Merrill's walking up to me with a little piece of paper saying, "You're heading to New York. You're pitching in New York tomorrow night. You're on a plane out of here this afternoon." I'm like, "That's when it really hit for me."
Yeah. Now we were lucky enough to get you in studio, but just talk about the relationship. There's one going on. It got two superstars in the studio, Justin Charles, Australia's.
I was looking behind you too.
But Australia's dual sport player, and of course yourself, Mark, pitch in MLB. But where did the relationship come from, you two guys?
Back in the under 13 state team was the first state team I ever represented Victoria for, and Mark was pitching for South Australia, and he was actually billeted by my family. At that tournament was held in Victoria, and ate us out of house and home. He did the boy, but
the food bill must have been phenomenal.
Yeah, but it was really interesting through our state careers. I mean, Mark dominated at that level all the way through, and you know, it was just a real source of pride to be able to say that I knew him when he was actually towing the rubber for the Yankees.
Yeah,
you know, finally, and you know, his baseball career sort of ran parallel to my footy career,
right?
And it was fun to watch. It was exciting.
Yeah,
you know, it was really
having
good.
That link there for sure.
And one of my questions is, tell us what was a day in the life like at major league level with the Yankees? What was the average day in the life?
Yeah, obviously with the Yankees, obviously that was my first experience as a big leaguer, so everything was A grade, you know, as you can imagine. So even though it was an old, really old stadium, it was everything was just done to the letter. So a lot of professionalism, obviously, but I think it was just the chartered buses taking it straight to the airport, and then there's straight to the tarmac, and then jumping onto that private jet. That was the sort of angle we were heading down. We would never go through airports and that type of thing. And that was really the key indication of, well, I've actually made it here, because this is, you know, like you do get looked after. It was sort of like a rock star sort of lifestyle. So being with the Yankees, it was like a rock show on wheels. You know, it was. It was just so much attention given to it, to our club, and that was the biggest thing I had to deal with, was just the absolute attention that was given to the Yankees as a group. You know, even if you're out in public, it was just like, oh, there's some Yankees, and it was just always a huge amount of pressure just being a Yankee.
Just being a Yankee, yeah. Amazing.
Does that change a lot, Mark, going to other teams in the major leagues? I know the Yankees, everyone looks at the Yankees as the all high and mighty, but, you know, you've played for a few big league clubs. Did it change much? Could you really feel that difference?
I did, and obviously you're touching on the Marlins. When I got traded over to Florida in 96, I got traded from Yankees to the Marlins, and actually it was a pretty easy transition looking back, because obviously I'd come from a really high pressure environment, the biggest brand in sporting history for mine, and then to sort of roll into the Marlins, where it was, the media was nowhere near. I mean, obviously, well, with the Yankees, every pitch is scrutinized, and there's 20 cameras in front of you, you know, asking why'd you throw that fastball in that situation, and everything was sort of judged. But when I went to Florida, it was a very laid back sort of atmosphere. It sort of suited my lifestyle, suited my personality. Mm. So I sort of drifted in there quite easily, and once I spent a bit of time there, I really felt comfortable there. Ended up getting a nice place in Florida, and it was just sort of more suburbia, playing baseball in the big leagues in suburbia. So it was as opposed to the Manhattans and the jungle that New York is. Mm.
Part of, as we just mentioned, Yankees, Marlins, also part of the Rockies and the Cincinnati Reds there. What sort of subtle differences might you have noticed from organisation to organisation? Is there a difference in playing style? Does it come down to the manager, the way he runs the ship? Is there the travelling secretaries and stuff like this? There's so many people that need to run an organisation. What sort of subtle differences might you have seen over the four different teams that you're with?
I'm not sure if it's any of it's really that subtle. Obviously, the Yankees had their private jet, and that was, whether that's subtle or not, probably not. But the subtleties were going from a private jet and then sort of, and then launching into the Colorado Rockies or Cincinnati Reds, where obviously the Reds, we actually flew on regular chartered flights with regular people. So it was like, that was Marge,
slumming it.
Marge Scott was the owner of the club, and she was pretty tight with her money at that stage. And she's actually put on record as saying that, you know, Adolf Hitler was a great man. But
I get you in trouble these days, but make sure we don't record that. That gets you in trouble.
But look, the differences were that obviously I'd come from the Yankees and then transgress through to these other teams, and it all is fairly similar. I mean, I think the biggest key to any of these clubs is that they all try to achieve the same thing, obviously, is to win a pennant. So the key to it is actually getting on the right side of the manager, and having a good relationship with the manager is really what sets it up for you. And if you don't get along with that guy, I got along with Jimmy Leland, who was with the Marlins. He was a great man. He looked after me. But he did call me in that office, like that Moneyball, movie. He called me into that office, that dreaded, come, I need to see you. And then, sure enough, that was it for me.
Mark, look, just on, you got traded mid-season. You spoke from the Yankees to the Marlins. Talk me through that. I know that's got to be a tough situation. You settle in, you got a house, you know, things are good, and all of a sudden it's changing.
It is changing, and it's changing forever, and it's
and quickly,
and
I
very
guess.
Quickly. Because what happened was, I'll just give you a quick brief on it. Was the where I was actually in Texas with the Yankees at this point, so I was due to pitch that following night as a starting pitcher for the Yankees. Because at that point they were still trying to figure out their fifth starter, that whether they were going to trade for someone or they were going to sort of blood me in. And at that point it was really difficult to sort of be a rookie and try and give a rookie a chance to blood themselves in as we're heading towards a pennant race. So certainly, when I was due to pitch in Texas, there's a trading deadline. So I'm due to pitch the following day, but there's a trading deadline at midnight that night before, and I was in the bar with the boys down in a bar in Texas It's odd me being in a bar, but
yeah, yeah, unlike you.
So anyway, I get back to my room after a few sherbets, and there's a message light on my phone, and it was about 5 to midnight, and it was Bob Watson, the GM of the Yankees, and said, he said, Mark, I called him up and said, mate, what's up? He goes, mate, we traded you to the Marlins. So that from that point forward, I jumped on a plane to Los Angeles, where my new team, the Marlins, were playing. So. Yeah. I ended up, Tracy, my wife, who's in the studio with my two beautiful boys.
Yes, the family in here. Yeah.
She ended up having to take care of all the loose ends in New York, and I never went back to New York after that point. So all my stuff was still there, and good old Trace had to take care of all the untidy parts. So it was a huge part of my life at that point. It was a huge shock to the system. I'd never been through the trade period or never been through the trade process before. So. It was certainly something it took a bit of time to get used to, but once it happened for me, I sort of settled into Florida pretty quickly.
The Yankees through that period weren't necessarily known for nurturing and blooding players through that period, so you probably were victim to that, as opposed to now, obviously with having to pay luxury tax, and you know now they're having to develop players more. But you still ended up getting the World Series ring, and we're very blessed to see that piece of sporting memorabilia. Look at that, baby.
There's the two-story block of flats right there. We're going to tweet it out later on. It'll be part of the show when we tweet it out later.
But just tell me, what was the... what are the criteria that they sort of... Where is the cutoff line, you know, for where people that are involved with the club, if the club goes on to win the World Championship, who gets a ring and who doesn't? And,
sure.
and how did that come
good
about
question,
for you? Because you got two.
I do have two, and there's a bit of a story to it.
One Yankees, one Marlins, yeah.
Yeah, and I've got two, but never actually played in the World Series, so obviously being dealt, both times.
That's what I appreciate about it, just quick. They appreciate that you've helped them get along that journey, so they reward players
Correct.
That have helped
as,
them get
as
there.
As Jazzy was asking, was that the following year, because there was a bit of the core group of the Yankees, the leadership group, was up to them on whether the group or the two. There was three guys that got traded. There was myself, Bob Wickman, and Gerald Williams.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of discussion on whether three of us will get rings, because at that point Joe Torre's was the manager. Joe Torre's brother was in hospital very ill, and it turned out that he ended up getting the ring, and I'm thinking, oh, hang on, this doesn't seem right. It's like okay, he's crook in bed and what have you, but where's our rings, you know, what's going on? So I think the group came together and sort of discussed that, you know, these guys have contributed to the season as they have, and I think they deserve it. So they sort of they delivered me the ring when I was with Florida the next year. So they presented me with the Yankee ring while I was in a Marlins uniform.
Did you get booed?
No. It was a little sort of in-house sort
quiet
of
ceremony
quiet ceremony
on the side,
side with Kevin Brown at the time, remember? And it was interesting. But that's sort of the criteria, I guess, was just that because a lot of clubs don't really roll down that track. And I think being the Yankees, that they were the professional as they were, I think they just sort of did the right thing by us.
Mm.
You go on, Russ. Go on.
Who was that leadership group of the Yankees in those days?
Oh, man, you're talking Wade Boggs was my third baseman. Don Mattingly was my first baseman.
Wow, it was an all-star team.
Yeah.
Boggs just got his number retired at Boston. That happened just last week.
An amazing individual. Look, the team was stacked, and that was another thing where it was just a really daunting scenario for a young kid from Australia rolling into these clubhouses with the likes of Daryl Strawberry, because Daryl Strawberry ended up coming over to the Yankees. Doc Gooden, who was a 96 World Series pitcher, the Doc, you know. So it was just
big names,
massive names, and I just felt as though sometimes I didn't belong, you know. It was just sort of...
That's why I asked at the start, just that moment where you sort of went, hang on, I'm here, and I dreamt about this when I was playing back at home in South Australia, and now I'm actually doing it in Yankee Stadium.
Correct. And the thing was, ironic is that I was actually on a family holiday with my family in New York, went to a Yankee game when I was about 17 or 16 years of age.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't even thinking about dreaming of playing for the Yankees back then. I was just taking it all in, you know, Dad, can you get me a jacket, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And 7 years later, I'm pitching for them. So it was, it was kind of strange.
Did you get him tickets to the game? I hope you did.
Actually, the old man never actually saw me pitch in the big leagues, which is a bit of a shame. But certainly good times.
One of the we're known for our big heavy hitting questions here. We really really get in depth on most of this stuff. We had Brad Thomas last week or the week before. Rookie duties. What was your rookie duty when you actually made it to MLB?
I remember, funny you mentioned that. There was one particular. I got away with a fair bit of stuff in
by
New
the
York.
Size of you. No wonder, mate. No wonder.
But what did stand out for me when I was with the Marlins, and I was sort of kind of still in that rookie status, if you like, but sort of just on the knife's edge. But every time the Marlins or any club for that matter would roll into Chicago, there was a massive big ball in this park on the drive to the stadium to Wrigley Field. There's this massive brass ball, and it had two massive agates. So you had to somehow between then and the next bus ride to the stadium, you had to have painted
the bull's balls
the colour of your team. So Christ. That was so we had to sneak out at 2 a.m. and find a bit of paint and spray these balls and the colour of the Marlins, which was teal at that point, which is a fairly ordinary colour, but ended up the following day we were rolling into Wrigley Field and sure enough the balls were painted, so we got away with that one.
nice.
Now there's a beautiful article a couple of years ago now in the Herald Sun, and it spoke about how when you finish professional baseball, just that transition back into normal life. And I went through the same thing with football, and it ended abruptly for me with injury, but I really identified with that, how you got that message across. You know, what was I going to do now that I'm not doing baseball? And just that, you know, bumping around from job to job, not knowing what to do because you devote the greater part of your adult life chasing a dream and focused on that, and now all of a sudden it's dead stopped. That hasn't just tapered off, it's just dead stopped, and now what do you do? How did you deal with that?
Really good question, Jazzy. Mate, as you touched on, it is the most difficult thing I've had to put up with. Obviously didn't make the millions and millions of dollars that I once could have, potentially, but at the end of the day, it didn't come to an absolute abrupt halt. It sort of tapered off as I was with the Reds and the Rockies. I was sort of had a couple of arm surgeries at that point, so I went from sort of throwing 96, 97 miles an hour, sort of down to that 90, 91 with not as much as command as I once had, even though my command was not always that great when I was at my peak. But certainly as the last couple of years drifted in, I just struggled with zone and struggled with velocity, and I just sort of knew then, Juzzy, that this is all sort of, it's not the Mark Hutton that I once was. And I sort of realised then that even pitching on a big league roster, you've got to be at the top of your game. Mm. It's so difficult even when you're healthy to perform at that level, and when you're battling with injuries and what have you, it finds you out pretty quickly. So for me, yeah, so 12 years backwards and forwards, and all of a sudden it did just stop. I didn't get that phone call anymore. I'm so used to going back to the US in February. All of a sudden I'm just hanging out. I bought a Harley instead and drove around on that for a couple of years.
Right.
And I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to just, at that point I had no idea what to do next, and it was sort of jumping from job to job, and it took me a couple of years to figure out, well, I'm actually going to have to go get a job now.
A real job.
That's a rude shock.
Yeah, massive shock.
Did you go through any sort of depression around that? Because I really identified, and it almost was a mirror of what the feelings I was feeling, and did you ever have any of those feelings?
Well, we're going to get quite deep here, aren't we, Jazzy?
Just before you answer, I was chipping. Russ found there's a website that has been developed just over the last, how long has that been?
Look, Justin might be a part of this. Is that there's a Facebook site with sort of essentially retired MLB, MILB players.
Yeah.
And I found it absolutely fascinating. And I don't want to speak out of school because it is a sort of a bit of an in-house thing. But these blokes speak about life after baseball. And I know I really struggled once baseball stopped, your identity's gone, essentially. This is what you are. You know, you're Mark Hutton, New York Yankee, Justin Charles, you know, Richmond footballer. I really struggled with life after baseball. And these guys speak about it quite in depth, and they put it out to their, you know, the fellow retired guys. And I really found it comforting to know that the thoughts that I had and how I struggled with life after baseball, that these blokes were going through the same thing. We're blokes, we don't talk about it too much, but I found it really interesting, and I think now it's sort of starting to come out that it's tough. It's really, really tough once your identity's taken away from you when your baseball career is over or your footy career is over.
That's a great call on that Facebook. I'm not sure who
it's amazing, isn't it?
But I reckon within the first 24 hours, there was like 11,000 members.
Yeah.
And it just ended up just getting some serious legs, this whole past players thing. But I really, to be honest, Jazzy, I'd speak to my wife. It was hard times. She had to deal with me in a whole different level. I was moody, still am. Grumpy, and I
that's just normal life,
yeah,
mate.
And it did sort of hit me for a sixer. It was like, what am I going to do now? Mm. And it was this mental battle that I just had to deal with. And it has probably taken me up until this point to really realise that, you know, 12 years later, it is what it is. I've got to get on with my life, and it's sort of wallowing for the last 10 years. What could have been and what should have been. It's like, you know what.
Yeah.
Let's not head down that track anymore.
Oh man!
And Trace was a really good support network for me, just with being with positive words and just sort of trying to get on with it best you can, and without looking in the rearview mirror and just looking forward, you know.
You are working with the next generation too, aren't you? You're involved in some coaching of baseball now.
Yeah, over the journey of since retirement, I did the Olympic thing, which was a bit of a flop in regards to performance. As far as we had a really rock solid squad, and then from that point on, 2000, it was the cut off for me. So that was the last time I ever pitched competitively. So now I sort of transitioned into pitching coaching for state junior teams, even a couple of senior teams. I think it was the Claxton Shield back in those days before it became the new ABL again. So I've been in and out of some coaching roles over the journey, and obviously with my two boys now playing, that sort of brought me back into baseball as well, because I did have a hiatus of baseball for a while. I just wanted to get away from it, and it took me probably a good 4 or 5 years to sort of get myself back into it. And I sort of thank my kids for choosing the game of baseball. Probably a little bit of steering from me as well.
Yeah,
just a little bit of steering from me. So they've brought me back into it, and I've got the hunger back for it again, as from a coach's point of view.
Awesome.
That sort of feeds the voids, if you like, that I used to have back in the day. That, you know what, I can fix things with coaches, with messages to kids.
Pass on your knowledge, mate. Over time, once the older you get, you sort of realise, hang on, I know a whole lot about this game that you never thought about beforehand because you're out there playing.
Yeah.
But as you get a little older, you realise the knowledge that you do have,
yeah,
pass it on to the next generation, mate.
And the biggest kicker with that is that not only a lot of big leaguers or what have you, a lot of past players have seen and done a lot of things, but it's delivering that message, I think, is key as well, you know.
Sure.
Understanding the game of baseball is one thing, but to deliver that correct message to young kids is key.
Australia as a game need people like yourself in it, and it's an absolute credit to yourself that you are. And what about you, boys? What position do you play? Are you pitchers? Of course, good work.
Of course.
That's where all the money is, good boy.
Mark, we spoke to Brad Thomas last week, and he had a great career worldwide. He travelled all over the place. And he's only now just going through that transition of baseball to real life, but he's sort of decided now that he wants to get involved in baseball at a higher level within Australia. Is it something that you'd aspire to do? Would you want to get back involved? I know you were with the MLB Academy for a little while.
Yeah.
Is there something you want to do? Do you want to get back into this ABL Australian fold and contribute that way?
Well, yeah, most definitely. I think with the academy, just touched on that for a minute. I mean, obviously, with these kids today, having this opportunity to have this academy in place for the, let's just say, the best 100 kids that come to the come to this academy, I never had that as a kid. So I was, as you touched on, I was the fourth guy, so I was a bit of a pioneer to that whole process. Mm. So I had Adrian Ma, who I surrounded myself with. I've actually flew to Brisbane and just because he was the only pro guy at that point. Mm-hmm.
One of the hardest throws I ever saw.
Yeah,
he was a good one.
Disgusting.
A little fizz when it came past. Yeah,
sure,
that little fizz
just
goes.
That
sure
big 12-6 hammer. Just massive.
Absolutely.
So he was absolutely a pioneer. He got the AAA at that point. And that's, I needed to surround myself with someone that had been there before.
Mm.
And that was sort of the early stages going back now. But I needed to get around that guy and just sort of.
Was Nilsson there? Nilsson would have been there at that stage.
Yeah, Nilsson was in that comp. And
but not a pitcher.
No. I ended up getting involved with the Brisbane local league, if you like, the local baseball league up there, and pitched in that league for a few weeks prior to heading to the Australian Championship. So,
was Lloydy in that mix too? Did you get around Graham Lloyd at all?
No, not really. No, he was sort of. I guess we all got signed in a similar sort of era. So he was certainly around, but not at that point. It was sort of more Adrian Marr was the, main focal point for me. Yep. But to answer your question, I am doing the academy now, which I really enjoy. I'm going back up there next month again to be around these kids. And obviously the four or five guys that are up there, myself, Graham Lloyd, there's some massive big league experience up there. So to have those kids have us around there is something that I never had. So these kids are pretty fortunate.
Mm. That's awesome.
The closest I get to anything New York Yankees is watching the back of George Steinbrenner's head on Seinfeld. And this week he's been after his eggplant calzone. Did you get to deal with Steinbrenner at all? He was an enigma and now passed away, of course, and the club has been handed over to his two sons.
Correct.
But did you get to deal with him at all? And was he as sort of hands-on in the club as what he was being made out to?
The only times I was with the Yankees in the big league level for 3 years, and he'd sometimes poke his head in to the clubhouse, obviously heading towards the pointy end of the season. If things weren't sort of rolling in the way he would expect, he would come in and give us a bit of a spray and a bit of a message of, look, boys, we need to improve in this area, and give us a bit of a spill. That only happened two or three times in my journey there, but when things are on the rocks, he would certainly show his face and say his two bobs worth. But there was one particular story where my first time meeting George, I was in the training room with Gene Monaghan, who was the trainer at that point about 30 years. Anyway, George has walked in, and this is my first year, and the trainer's introduced me to George, and we've sort of had our pleasantries and what have you, and Gus said, "G'day, George, how are you, mate?" Da, da, da. And George has walked out, and Gene Monaghan of 30, 35 years has said, "I've been here 35 years, man. I've never, ever referred to Mr. Steinbrenner as George."
You're not from Australia, mate. He's George to me.
I've always just referred to him as Mr. Steinbrenner. I said, being a young 23-year-old and a little bit of arrogance potentially, it's like, well, shit, that's his name, ain't it?
So, that's the way it goes.
That's sort of how it was. So that was my introduction to George. And then, as I said, mate, he just sort of every now and then would stick his head in the clubhouse. But you know what? There was one particular – there was a guy – from the clubhouse to the leading down the race to the dugout, there was a guy on the door. That was his job, was to just open and close the door for the players that would come in and out.
On this one
particular occasion, this guy didn't open the door for someone, and George got wind of it, and he'd been on the door for about 40 years.
Wow.
He was about 75 when I was there, so I ended up firing him because he didn't open a door for someone.
He was
a pretty harsh man.
Well, at least we know why you got traded.
Yeah.
Calling the boss George.
It's probably Butt Sealy coming in, didn't open the door for him.
Oh, yeah. The whole George Steinbrenner thing, I hear how hard and tough he was. I was playing against the Yankees, right, not in big leagues, obviously, in A-ball, and he ran his company from upstairs in Tampa. So he had a big shipping company that ran from upstairs. We'll go there one day, and the field looked really average. For a Yankee complex, the field was terrible. He went down while we were there. He walked through our clubhouse, in through our dugout, didn't say anything to anyone, walked to the head grounds crew, and said to him, "What's wrong with my field?" And he said, "Oh, we sprayed it with something. Didn't quite come up the way we want." He said, "I'll be back in 2 weeks. If my field's not back to the way it's supposed to be, you're in strife." So we sort of thought, you poor bugger. Now, this is his livelihood here.
Yeah.
We went back a month later, whole new grounds crew, not one bloke. And I said, where really? Are they? He said, "You come and fired them all
fired
for
them.
spraying the field with something that wasn't necessarily needed to be sprayed with." And
wow.
The field looked fantastic, but it was a whole new group of blokes.
As I say, I only see the back of his head from the Seinfeld episodes.
Tough man.
Yeah, it must have been a tough one. But, they're heading in the right direction. I think he bought them for $1.50 back in the 70s, and now they're worth, $4 billion or something as an organisation?
Mm. Mate, do you still track the Major League Baseball? Or you still keep a run an eye over it?
To be honest, Josie, not as closely as you'd expect. No, I don't. I really don't get too heavily involved with it. And if I walk into a bar and there's a game on, I'll obviously it'll get my attention. But certainly I don't watch the standings anymore. And every now and then I'll catch a highlight on social media or something. There's always something being posted about MLB stuff. So to answer your question, not heavily, but I sort of do. I keep a sort of bit of distance from it, but I am still interested in it, obviously. So,
yeah, of course.
Mark, we're going to have to wrap it up there, mate. Really appreciate you coming in. If you need any updates regards to your baseball fix, just tune in to SEN Baseball right here. It's where you get it all, latest latest gossip going around. But really appreciate you coming in today. Thanks to the family coming in. Hope you enjoy the footy. You're going to the AFL this afternoon.
Tomorrow.
Tigers. Yes, tomorrow. Who are they up against?
The Suns. Mighty Gold Coast Suns, and he'll be my guest at the Inner Sanctum there at Richmond, and I'm sure he'll rub shoulders with some of the Tigers there. So it'll be a good day with the families, families.
Hope the weather clears a little. It's been a little rough this morning.
Tragic, unfortunately to say. Sometimes, when they win, we all sort of jump on the bandwagon, but when they lose, we sort of keep a little bit quiet. Us Tigers fans.
Pretty quiet of late.
Yeah, very good.
Be a great
but
day
mate,
anyway.
Really appreciate you coming in. Thanks very much for your time, sharing a few of the experiences. We'd like to give you a call again some other time because we know there's loads that we could talk about, but really appreciate you coming on this morning. Thanks very much for your time.
Not a problem, guys. Appreciate having me.
And a big thanks to Mark Hutton there, Major League with the Yankees, Reds and Rockies. JC, you've outdone yourself, mate, getting him in the studio. Beautiful work.
Wasn't he good?
Terrific, mate.
Wow. And I just found myself going, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, like, we'll try.
Reeling off the names. Mattingly, Boggs.
We'll try and get him again at some other stage because they've just got never-ending stories. And as I mentioned during the chat there, we're going to tweet out the World Series ring that he was presented with the New York Yankees. But, guys, that's all we've got for today. Really appreciate you coming in the studio. Of course, Mark Hutton, MLB, I just mentioned there. John Deeble, the manager of the Australian national team. Thanks very much to yourself, Russ, for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Good stuff. And JC, stellar work, mate. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy the footy tomorrow. That's all we got for today, folks. Thanks for listening to SEN Baseball. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the SEN MLB podcast. For more SEN America podcasts, head to sen.com.au. To keep up to date with the latest American sports news and interviews from around SEN, follow SEN America on Twitter at SEN America and on Facebook at facebook.com/SEN America.